Hello, friends. My name is Joe Armstrong. Welcome to an Independence Day Fast Forward episode where we check in with artists who've previously been on the show, bring them back and see what they are up to. Tim Easton is a Nashville-based singer and songwriter, but he's lived all over the world, written songs all over the world, excellent songs. You should check out what he does. He does really great work. He's at timeaston.com. He's on the Facebook. He's on the Twitter, Tim_Easton. Tim, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Joe. Thanks for inviting me to come back to the neighborhood and do the thing again.
I appreciate it, man. You're starting a tour. You've got a brand new record called American Fork. It just came out just about a month ago.
Yep.
And it's a full band affair this time around. I know you've done all kinds of different ensembles. You've done like solo-ish type stuff.
Yeah.
You're writing Joshua Tree, like different things. Like, why did you choose to go this direction to have another full band record?
It is my lot in life to wander around wondering what kind of record I'm going to make next. Like, as soon as I finish one, I'm on to the next. And
yeah.
it changes and morphs and here and there. And oftentimes I want to record an album that's easy for me to go out on the road and support solo acoustically because I can't afford to bring a whole band with me. And what I did with this one is I was like, well, all these songs I have to be able to play on an acoustic guitar. I'm going to be able to just play any one of them and not sweat it that I don't have a band.
So is it...
Because I got a big band going, and it's like, next thing you know, it's Patrick Damphier. I got everything about him. He records under the name Field Days. Patrick Damphier is a producer that lives and works in Nashville, Tennessee. He's a great musician as well. He can play every instrument well. He's the one, actually, who kind of stepped in and produced and brought the production into it that made it so big and so warm and great. And he engineered it, mixed it, mastered it. He did it all, man. And it says that we co-produced it on the back, and I just want to put it on the record. Patrick, I love you, man. You just nailed it with this record. It's like I'm just so proud of it. But I, you know, this one has bridges. The song has bridges.
The middle eight, as they say.
You know, it's got minor chords in it. Like, the last album was a very simple blues-based thing. And this one, we kind of went all out. And I showed up with the acoustic guitar, and Patrick was like, why don't you play the electric guitar?
Okay.
Let's sing with the band, you know? And even though it was recorded kind of Dylan style, as I like to say, meaning I was sang with the band, and what you get is what you
live,
you
know, in a room.
Get. Live in a room with a band, but a very big room with the drums in their own room, and a big room with little rooms inside it.
Right, right, right.
And you can see, so we're talking a warehouse, you know?
Yeah.
This is like Warhol's factory meeting Abbey Road in this place of great creativity, so, and really good gear and amazing stuff. So, long answer to your question is I went the route of production and because I could, you know, and it's really enjoyable to make records. And I believe making records and live touring is a different ball game. Some people's job is to go imitate that record. My job is a folk musician. I'm basically a singer songwriter folky guy that just goes out and I entertain each room each night specifically for that room.
Yeah.
So
I think of all the I've seen you play a number of times in various places. I saw you in Chicago, I think, was the first time I ever saw you play at the Abbey, if I remember correctly.
Right.
And you had some semblance of a band at that point.
Yeah, maybe Jay Bennett was there.
I don't know. I knew Jay. I mean, not on a super personal level. From Wilco, we're talking about.
A drummer
about.
And a bass player from Cleveland, yeah.
Roosevelt, yeah, okay. Guys. It was like a small ensemble kind of thing. It was a late show.
Yeah.
You know, not expecting you or other people to remember that particular thing, but that's just the first, because it stands out of my memory. It's the only time I've seen you play with a band. Every other time I've seen you've been solo.
Yeah.
That's not true. I showed up at Joshua Tree one time.
Oh, right.
And just for like a weekend away from LA, and we rented a little cabin out there, and me and the girl I was dating at the time had no idea what we were just going to go and relax.
Right.
And with the intent to kind of stay close to the cabin.
Yeah.
And I talked to the guy who ran the property. He's like, oh, you know, what's going on in town? And town is a very relative thing in Joshua Tree. He's like, oh, a musician's playing this tonight. You know, I'm a musician. So I said, well, who is it? And he's like, well, it's Tim Easton. You probably wouldn't know him.
Yeah.
So there's that. And I was like, no. He said, it's Tim Easton. I said, oh, I know Tim, you know, on like super personal level, but I know of him, you know. So we went down and saw you played a pizza parlor in Joshua Tree with a band that seemed like they didn't know the songs.
Oh. That's a good place to go.
And I hope I'm not calling anybody out.
No, that's a good place to go with a band and have a little bit of a jam.
Yeah, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. It felt like more of just kind of an improvised affair, but it was cool just the same.
Yeah. I just played with both of those guys 2 days ago at the Joshua Tree Roots Fest. We played three songs at the end of my set, and it was great.
At a pizza
place? Nailed it. Yeah, the great musicians, Ben Kennedy, Damien Lester, just guys that live out in Joshua Tree that are great musicians.
There's a lot of artist stuff going on out there. Yeah. So what you're saying, I guess, to backtrack just a little bit, is that the intent was to do a similar sort of record to what you've been doing, like show up with your guitar and your rack of harmonicas and just kind of blast out some songs. And then he, the producer, said to you, hey, I think this needs more.
Well, I'm into saying yes now and just accepting other people's ideas. I've already done it my way enough time. I've imposed my will on stuff enough. It's like, and it's gotten me to where it's gotten me. Let's try something different. And that's really the way I went with it. And Patrick, you know, he took the idea, the backing vocals thing, to just a new level of Leonard Cohen-y / Beatles-y type things. Yeah. And these are all my neighborhood friends. And he's just really good at grabbing sounds and mixing them down. And you know, we brought in Russ Paul on pedal steel. This guy's on records that everybody's heard. Yeah. And, you know, when you put a pedal steel, we overdubbed the pedal steel, so there you go. But the minute you bring that in, a steel on top of a Lush band already, you get orchestral sounds are going.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like what happened. And we stripped it down for some things and kept it loud and big for others. And I'm super proud of it. And it's unlike any other record I've made, as are all of them. They're all different in their own way.
It's so new. I personally haven't heard very much of it, but I'm looking forward to it because, I mean, I love the solo thing, but I think I like the band in terms of just music to listen to.
Sure.
I like it when artists can do both, but I like it when there's contrast, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Right.
So that there's the solo thing and the songs hold up, but they're malleable enough to kind of be bent into a more complex arrangement, because then you have so much more in the way of dynamics. Loud, soft, quiet, you know, the timbres of different instruments, the textures of different instruments.
I think I'm a little bit, you know, mentally unbalanced to be sure, but like bringing out a band on the road, unless I was making the kind of money that would make everybody comfortable and happy, that's all what it gets down to.
Yeah.
I can't afford to travel with a band, and nor do I want to have to look out for a band and worry about their morning to night, their meals and everything.
Right.
I know that wouldn't be my job, but I get too micromanagey, and that might have been why my career is where it is at the moment, on a massively upward arc. But it's like,
reach for the stars, Tim.
I really, you know what's true? Like I didn't think about big. I think folky. I think campfire. It's like that. My success, my version of success is someone singing one of my songs at a campfire 100 years from now.
Yeah.
And I know that I should think bigger than that, because now I'm a father. Or I should have always been thinking bigger than that. But it's just kind of in my nature to keep it low key. And I love traveling around and playing solo acoustic. I like traveling by myself. I like being the lone wolf.
Right.
Two or three is fine. But that whole three's a crowd thing is really, really a big deal to me. I mean, you know, unless they can travel like I can travel, and we've got that, you have to dial that in with a band. You got to dial that stuff in, and it's not always easy.
There's freedom that comes with that, like being able, and I mean with a capital F, like to do what you're doing, and it very and it appeals to you and what you're doing, because the songs are malleable. Like you can, having seen you play with a band, you know, and there's something I want to talk about real quick, and then I want to talk about the big giant gorilla in the room, which is the election. But there's something that you do with guitar that I find very, very interesting, is that in some regards, it would almost, and go with me on this, it would almost be like overplaying.
Sure.
Right. If you were playing with a band, you couldn't play all the intricate little stuff that you're doing, because I encourage people to check out you've got a YouTube channel too. Yeah. Go to the YouTube channel. Just look up Tim Eason on the YouTubes and you'll find his stuff on there, because you're a very inventive guitar player when it comes to accompanying yourself. Right. You do things that, I mean, I wouldn't think to do. And I think that's really, really fascinating, because you fill a lot of space harmonic, but there's a lot of harmonic motion in what you're doing, which I think is really interesting. So kudos to you, man.
I leave, and that will damage some of the singing sometimes. If I concentrate on just strummy guy and then sing, that's one thing. But I do like to fill the space, and I do like to play in between the verses and do little hooks and things. And that's all stuff I learned from Doc Watson.
Yeah.
You know, or watching some greats play, and guys that could do it by themselves with a guitar.
Right.
You know, and there just aren't many of them. There's a few. You know, I'm not saying that I'm special or anything, but there aren't many guys that would sit there and could entertain me for a full set.
Right.
by themselves with a, you know, Randy Newman on a piano by himself. I'm in, you know, I'm hooked.
Totally.
Neil Young could probably do it pretty good too, right? And I'm not saying I'm in league with those guys, but when I when a guy comes in to sing songs, he better have it, or a woman comes in to sing, there better be more than just a pretty voice. There better be a lyric that just melts my mind and makes me think that you feel what I feel and I must learn what you feel more, you know?
Right.
Or there must be some guitar playing or piano playing or musicianship that makes me want to learn.
Yeah.
So I don't know. After all these years, probably the street started it out for me. After all these years, yeah, I've dialed it in so I can do it by myself and I can get the job done just fine.
I think that's the, honestly, for me at least, that's the hardest thing to do is to do it solo.
Right.
Because you are responsible for all the rhythmic motion, the harmonic motion, the lyrics, the melody.
The comedy.
There's no the comedy, there's no the sorrow, the joy, the tragedy, the everything.
Yeah.
And you're taking on that mantle as an entertainer. And entertainment can be sad, entertainment can be happy.
Yeah. I see tears and laughter every night.
Yeah.
And it's real. And I...
That means you're doing it right.
Yeah, it's right. That's when people tell me they've cried, or I say that. I mean, I'm just doing my job, and you.
Yeah.
It's like a compliment, and I gotta say, like when I want to hold on to a chord for a couple extra bars, then I do. If I want to take a deep breath, or if I have to hiccup or something, there's all this liberty with playing by yourself, and also if I just want to stop and address something that just happened. Or be, as comedians would call it, day of material.
Right.
Day of material. Work with the crowd. Deal with the heckler.
Work the room.
Not that I get, you know, hecklers, maybe not the right word, because I don't really often get a heckler.
You suck, he said.
Yeah, it's like, you know. But, I mean, there's always, you know, you'd be surprised at the gigs that...
No, I know.
...that I cross. And, yeah, I'm not at
no,
the level...
I'll play...
You know, six great gigs, and then all of a sudden I'll be in this bar that I should not be in playing when, and there's a baseball game on or something. And you're like,
right.
How did this happen? It happened because it's my fault. I take responsibility for it, and I try to make the best of it. And but I really am trying to slow that aspect down and keep the good gigs and ditch the shitty gigs.
Yeah.
Pardon
me.
That's okay. Keep the good gigs and ditch the bad gigs.
I know exactly what you're saying, because this is a story that I tell too much. I'll give you the very short version. I was playing a show in a bar in Chicago at one point, and people were really engaged, and I was like, yeah, this is awesome. They're like really paying attention. I'm like making faces and different things. And then all of a sudden everybody started making these really gruesome faces, and I was like, what's going on? That wasn't a sad lyric or wasn't a terrible lyric. And I noticed there was a TV above my head and they were showing Jaws. So apparently Quint had just been eaten, or the surfer or the water skier or whatever. Like, so now I'm thinking like, yeah, this is my job. This is what I do for a living. I'm competing with Spielberg movies for entertainment dollars is what I'm doing. Anyway, one real quick thing about busking before we get on to the election thing, which is like the juicy, juicy topic, is you little detail. You said while we were setting up that you actually did some busking overseas with someone named Beck.
Right.
Perhaps you've heard of him.
Mr. Zanku Chicken himself.
Yep. Any good Beck stories, real quick ones that we can tell?
You know what? It was fantastic. I lived over there, had an apartment in 1991, right around Gulf War time. Beck was over there looking for his grandfather, or going to hang out with his grandfather, Al Hansen, who was part of the Fluxus art movement. He used to build sculptures out of cigarette butts, you know, was friends with John and Yoko. He's kind of one of those cats. And he would pass through, and my friend James Rowe, who lives here in Los Angeles, said, hey, my friend Beck's coming, let's put him up. I'm like, all right, great. Shows up with a Gibson, old Gibson guitar with no case. Immediately, within a day, I knew there was something special about this guy. He did know a lot of Woody Guthrie songs right off the bat. He just had something different. That's all there was to it.
Yeah.
Next thing you know, we're out busking. And if there's one story I'm going to tell, he wrote about it in his book, in the book American Music by Annie Leibovitz. He wrote an essay in there, which go read, because it talks about how he discovered this African music up on the hill in Montmartre. But what the story I will have to go do is... that the three of us, me, Beck, and James Rowe, went to Jim Morrison's grave, which was actually in the arrondissement where I lived in that neighborhood. So we went over there with our guitars. We met three girls from Iceland. We brought them back to my flat. I cooked them pasta. We pulled out our guitars and started playing songs, and they left.
That's not how it's supposed to work.
No, we met these three girls at Jim Morrison's grave, brought them back to our place. The minute we started playing music, they excused themselves.
I guess they knew it was about to go down.
Yeah,
I guess.
I mean, who knows? We were all learning Travis style picking at the time.
Yeah.
And you know, I saw the next time I saw Beck, you know, Loser had just come out of the. He sent me a cassette with a bunch of like One Foot in the Grave stuff, and we kept in touch a little bit. And the last song on the cassette he sent me was this first early mix of Loser, and I drove it around my neighborhood in Columbus, Ohio, to all my friends. I was like, "Listen to this."
Yeah.
And all of us were just like, that. It was brand new. I mean, it wasn't, we hadn't heard folk music or Delta Slide mixed with hip hop beats. We just hadn't heard, nobody had heard that yet. So it was so brand new. And it was political too, because the version I had George Herbert Walker Bush's voice in it. Like, I'm a winner, or I'm a, you know, the whatever.
Oh, right,
say.
Right, right.
Yeah. So there was more of that in that early version.
Yeah.
So that is something that has been glossed over, I think, in Beck history or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, everybody tries to focus on other things now, but I, you know, that was a, like, it also had a political side to it. So to me it did anyways. And, you don't hear him doing that now. And same as Dylan, you know, Dylan started out, the times that are changing were, you know, his second album, super political, like songs like With God on Our Side on it. And that just blew my mind as a little kid. My mom made me listen to that. And, I've lately been talking about that a lot more because I just found that album in a record store and bought it for my daughter.
Yeah. I had a little Fisher Price record player when I was a kid, and my mom had Beatles singles, of course.
Yeah.
And she brought down, I remember the Apple logo very distinctly, but she played, I think Hey Jude was backed up with Revolution, if I'm correct, and it was the electric version. You know, this is almost not quite Reagan era, maybe.
I have that 7-inch.
And, you know, so, and I like the Revolution one, but as a kid, like, hearing something about Revolution was something you only heard about in, you know, history class.
Oh,
and at that grade level, it's pretty remedial. They're not really talking a lot about it. But I remember thinking, oh, that's something we can do, you know, which kind of brings me to my next topic. Actually, you're going to play us a song here in just a second, which is, this is like the big 800-pound gorilla, the big orange-faced, blonde-haired, giant, 9-foot-long red-tied gorilla in the room, both literally and figuratively. Is this politics thing? It's election season. Election's just a couple weeks away.
There's an election coming up right now, you're saying?
Yeah, I know it's hard to believe. In case, you know, I would be willing to bet that there are even people who have lived in caves who I can't imagine
lucky,
you wouldn't have heard about
lucky
it.
Lucky people. Those lucky people that are just
living
on a commune somewhere without any internet or
Lord.
Just farming the living the land and growing stuff. And
I
envy them.
I don't, do I ever, Tim?
You know, the tune that I'm going to play, Don't Spectate, Participate, came about many years ago when I was a street musician in Europe. I was over there right when I got to London in 1986, if you can believe it. There was a march, a march through the town of London, a demonstration that was to raise awareness for a guy that was in prison. And the guy that was in prison, his name was Nelson Mandela.
Mm-hmm.
And I had never heard of Nelson Mandela, and I'd never heard of Billy Bragg, but there was a concert at the end of the thing with another guy by the name of Boy George, another guy by the name of Sting, Big Audio Dynamite, and my introduction to Billy Bragg. And we marched through town, and during the march, I stepped aside to take some photographs that I still have, and this gentleman in a bright green mohawk was walking by, and he screamed at me, "Don't spectate, participate!" And I just lodged that away in the brain for a while, and I wrote the tune a couple years ago before this election, but you can better believe that I've been singing it every day this month, because it doesn't pick sides. It just says, it doesn't point fingers, really. It points fingers to the apathetic, I guess.
Right.
And right now, of course, it's all about the millennials. You know, I can completely understand what it's like to come of age, or I'm sorry, I can completely sympathize with those that are coming of age right now, and this is the election that they have to deal with, to vote with. I mean, no wonder why they want to just toss it in and say
this is your starting point.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I'm sorry to interrupt. That's almost inconceivable to me to have this be the election that is your first taste of an election. Because what's going to happen 4 years, 8 years, 12 years down the road?
Completely sad, and
This is their benchmark.
Despicable, like, and I'm not, again, no side pointing here. I mean, it's really just, we've all let this happen. It's kind of our fault. And I like to say it's educate, you know, because of education. If education was, you know, could just be taken up a few notches from the beginning to, you know, and then parenting. Parenting and
which is
education,
part of education.
Right. It completely is. And parenting is maybe the most important responsibility that you're ever given in life. And I have to say, I'm doing my best. I'm out here rambling around quite a bit, but I feel like it's happening, and I'm really happy to do it. And I'm happy to go and visit my friends that are school teachers, kids, and sing for them too, and do that the Woody Guthrie thing.
All right. Well, let's hear this. My guest on Independence Day Fast Forward this week, Tim Easton. You can go back. He joined us, when was this? Way back on February 12th of 2014 is when this aired. But we recorded our episode in your basement. And thank you for being so gracious.
No problem.
For opening your home to that, doing it in your basement in Nashville. That was New Year's Eve of 2013, which
thank
seems
you.
Like only yesterday.
Thank you for supporting independent, true independent artists that are rambling around doing their thing.
Oh, man. It's my honor to do it. I mean, I am among your legion. And I felt in some way compelled to give back or participate in a different way, or because I know so many wonderful musicians, having traveled around as a musician myself, yeah. being a fan of music, as a writer of music, as a producer of music, that there's just so much that isn't getting heard. I hear people complain all the time, well, there's no great music anymore. And I think that's ridiculous. Yeah. I think there's as much, I mean, we're not in the growth period that we were in the early 70s when we had Zeppelin and the Beatles and everything, when something's new, right? Any art form, when it's new, it's growing. But we have so much fantastic music being heard these days. You just have to work a little harder to find it. So if I can present some of it, get it out there, raise profiles, get people listening to more things, or at least convince them that there's great things happening.
Thank you, Joe.
I will have succeeded. Anyway, so this is the song. You can find this on his website, I believe. Also the YouTube channel, timeaston.com.
There's a recording of me doing it in Australia where it's mandatory to vote, by the way.
Yeah, imagine that. And here, you know, we'll come back. We'll talk just a little bit more about voting, getting out and doing that kind of thing. This is the song, but you can also listen to this on indepday.com. It's our website. You'll find it there. This is Tim Easton. The song is Don't Spectate, Participate on Independence Day. Fast Forward.
The time has come for us to go and use our voices, cast our votes. But half of us will just look on while the others try to fix what's wrong. Don't spectate, participate. If you don't give a damn and you've nothing to say, well, if you won't give a damn, then step out of the way. If I hear another idiot say this election won't affect me either way, well, my selfish friend, that may be true, but there's a few more people in this world besides you. Don't spectate, participate. If you don't give a damn and you've nothing to say, well, if you won't give a damn, then step out of the way. And if I hear another coward say, if that one side wins, then I'm moving away. But do us a favor, get the hell out now. This land was never your land anyhow. You can spectate while we participate. Well, if you don't give a damn and you've nothing to say, well, if you won't give a damn, it's a damn shame. And if I hear about another regulation that prevents anybody from participation, well, I say to you, as you try to turn back time. You know, a lot of folks died so we could have this right. Don't spectate, participate. If you don't give a damn and you've nothing to say, well, if you won't give a damn, then step out of the way. Well, you might give a damn as you're fading away, but if you won't give a damn, it's a damn shame.
My name is Joe Armstrong. You are listening to Independence Day. This is our Fast Forward feature. We bring artists on who've previously been on the show, check in with them, see what's going on. This is Tim Easton. Say hello, Tim.
Hello, Joe.
He's got a fantastic new album. It's called American Fork. You can pick it up at timeaston.com. Also follow him on Twitter at tim_Easton. He's got a cool YouTube channel, 150 or so videos on there, I think.
Yeah.
Check that out. I want to talk about the 100 Songs Project in a minute, but before we're done, before we get off this political topic, let's see if we can do this succinctly and briefly. You've picked up like the sign, like the Pete Seeger thing. You're a folk musician out there among the people, like carrying a message around. And it's hard. I'm almost done. It's hard to do that and not like wear your progressive.
Put people to sleep.
to put people to sleep. But there's also the folk tradition that's very progressive, and there's a lot of people who go to those concerts. But it's hard to do that and not wear your politics on your sleeve. What I'm getting at is, do you ever get concerned about alienating a portion of your audience? Can you afford to do that? How important is that to you? That's an important choice for an artist.
Absolutely.
Springsteen can make that choice easily.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of what the boss has been doing. My gosh, he's like a beacon of light and hope. And I got to say, I'm way into the Woody Guthrie side of that. Left wing, right wing, chicken wing, it's all the same to me. I'm just trying to do hopefully the right thing, the supportive thing, the humanist thing. And I know that we all disagree about what the right or wrong thing to do is, but I don't. My whole shows aren't based around that. I'm just like, I don't have to worry about being quote unquote Dixie chicked off the radio.
Okay, right.
My album is actually being played on the radio quite a bit right now. The low on the dial stations, the NPR stations, the Americana stations. This last month, quite a bit of it. And
congratulations.
Thank you. And it's like, that's been great. And I don't have to worry about, you know, being removed from that stuff. Primarily also because like for the Dixie Chicks, I mean, they had a massive career. Like that was a huge change up. All of a sudden they went from this to nothing because everybody just abandoned them and that. But, you know, that's not my audience. You know, my audience is a lot smaller to begin with. But also, I'm bringing in new people all the time. And I guess just to answer your question, I think it's our responsibility. I'm not going to run for office, or I'm not going to do civics in a way of like, I'm not going to help. You know, I do neighborhood stuff. I definitely do that. But I think it's our responsibility as citizens to do something important for your neighborhood like that, to do your time, to go work, you know, whether it be with the church or with some group and help people that are either, you know, less fortunate than you, or just it's part of our responsibility.
Right.
It's the way I've learned it, and the way that that it's been taught to me to do that. And it started quite young, you know, when I went overseas. I went to the third world when I was a young man and helped in the barrios of Santo Domingo. So I'm not trying to preach it. I just think that's part of what I do. So my thing is I write a song occasionally every now and then that addresses things that are on my mind. I think it's my responsibility, and I think it's our responsibility as citizens to step up and speak our minds.
Yeah. Well, you said the C word right there, citizen, which is something I talk about a lot when I'm at the pub, especially about 2.5 pints in, right at the sweet spot. And it's like, I feel like we've been sold the idea that we're consumers before we're citizens.
Oh my gosh.
And I don't know that that's, you know, for us as the ones who are actually citizens, I don't think we know that switcheroo has taken place.
Yeah.
We need. And
the
need
lyrics
and want.
Of the first song and the new album are just all about that.
Yeah. So, need and want have been kind of blurred, what that line is, you know. And open your eyes. There are homeless people on the sides of the roads and...
Yeah, I mean, what's going on
this
in Haiti?
This is us.
What's going on in Haiti right now, and you know, North Carolina? I mean,
post Hurricane Matthew.
Yeah, it's completely brutal. And that is not going to change in the near future. It's actually going to get harder down there. So, yes, it does help to have viewed the country from afar, I have to say.
Yeah.
And I wish more Americans, North Americans, could go do that.
Yeah.
You know, by the way, people from the border of Mexico all the way to the bottom of Chile are also Americans, okay?
Right.
Don't try to pin any, like, socialist tags on me. They are Americans, too. They call themselves Americans. They're Central Americans. They're South. We, you know, this thing about America being ours, we're so close to it that we can't even accept that. You
right.
know that? I mean, I even also, when I'll say it to myself, like, yeah, it's, you know, well, back in America. But, like, that's just one... You know, we've all migrated here.
Right.
Migrants, migration is basically what humanity does to keep surviving. And to, like, actually tell some group of people that they can't escape a war-torn place because they, you know, and they want to take care of their families, that nope, migration's done. You know, human beings have been migrating around the planet for as long as we've been here. That's what's going on. That's what we do. It's
human nature.
It's so stubborn of people that to say we're going to shut something down.
Yeah. Well, I think we've got it backwards. Like our strength is in our diversity.
Yeah.
Our strengths are in the fact that we can get along peacefully. Having lived in Manhattan, in New York City, people walking down the street of in Los Angeles for that matter too, and other places I've lived where every conceivable language and every conceivable color and creed and belief system is there existing more or less peacefully. And in Manhattan, it's especially palpable because you're packed in like, I don't even know what, like a white dwarf star. Like there's so much energy in this one little place and you have to get along. The place would explode if it didn't or if people didn't. So
it's
anyway.
It's incredible. I can barely deal with the big cities anymore. Myself, I'm in Nashville now and that's about as, and it feels like a neighborhood to me.
Yeah.
But yeah, the South. You know, I've lived in the South now for over 4 years, and there was a learning curve and a cultural curve to because the onion peel layers of the South.
Right.
You know, it's something else, and I find it very remarkable and full of loads of great loving people.
Yeah,
and of course, there's people that think different, and you know, that's everywhere in the world you go. And I've been in the substitute teaching. I've been in the Metro Nashville sub program because I was kind of checking it out from the inside because my daughter was about to enter that. So I've been around schools and have had students come up to me and say, "Well, it's time for me to do my prayers now," you know, to Muslim and or Christian people and different religions. So I've been in the school system and seen that at place. And I just seen that in place. And I think there's loads of folks that are like, if they could just go to this, you know, New York would be one thing for sure, or Los Angeles or right here in Glendale, you know, but just go to a high school in any city and you're going to see what the future of this country actually really is.
Yeah.
You know, it's just ridiculous that the way people talk about shutting someone down, it's like, it really does upset me. And, That attitude and stuff is slowly fading away, and I have, you know, honestly, the Republican Party, if they don't start bringing forward people that are accepting of different sexuality choices,
whatever the other is,
if they don't start getting people, you know, that understand that the world is changing and that we change, we all change, and you know, there's evolution, it's evolution, like all the battles of an evolution, they're all in Tennessee. All the court cases are in Tennessee. The landlocked,
the monkey trials,
all that stuff is landlocked. Yeah, and so it's really remarkable to be there. And I, you know, when I see a rebel flag store, you know, and like in downtown Lynchburg, the unfortunately named Lynchburg, Tennessee, you know, I go in there and greet them and with a smile and say hi and try to just be civil with them. That's what I do. In the lineage of you know, of like Woody Guthrie or something like that.
Because
I go down, I fish the Elk River, and that same water makes Jack Daniels.
Right.
And that goes, you know, so I'm in Lynchburg a lot. I go to Lynchburg a lot. And first of all, it's called Lynchburg. Let's face it. That's a pretty disturbing name for a town. Secondly, there is a rebel flag store there, and it's more or less the front store for a certain hate group. And
right.
They have, you know, Nathan Bedford Forrest's photograph in there. next to a letter from the mayor that says, please don't display, don't do what you're doing here in the store. The mayor, you know, is like, please. The city council is like, come on, you guys. You're bumming everybody out. The whole world comes there. Japanese, Russians, whatever. They all come through there because Jack Daniels. And I go in there and I don't spend my money there, but I go in and shoot the breeze with the locals in there. I think I just try to be myself and try to learn a little bit. I've been to all 50 states before I turned 40, and I feel like I understand the country pretty well. I've been in all kinds of versions of it.
Yeah.
And I love it. And obviously Alaska is my that's my ultimate.
It's like your spiritual home.
Yeah, it is. I'm an honorary Alaskan. I've been told that by Alaskans, and I don't take that for granted. I'm super proud of it.
I think that's something you definitely have to earn.
Yeah.
They've got their own thing. It's like Texas, except
I'm working on Texas.
I was going to say, better is the right word to say, but it's a different stripe.
There's a regional snobbery thing going on with the both of them, and Alaskans like to say, we'll cut ourselves in half, and then you'll be the third biggest state in the union. That's how big Alaska is. Alaska's wonderful, and so is Texas. I dig them both, and I've been to Alaska 15 years in a row, and now I'm starting to work on Texas a little more.
I think people see what they want to see, and they find what they're looking for. I've been guilty of it myself when I was younger. You go to a strange place, and if your heart's not open to it, you're going to find stuff that you're looking for, even if you don't know you're looking for it. You're going to find unhappiness. Right. But you have to have the courage to open your heart to where whatever it is you're going to and whatever it is you're looking for, because that's the only way that you'll ever really be happy anywhere, is to be open to that. And I think it takes more courage to be that way than it does to be harder or to be close-minded about things, in my opinion.
Yeah, because it's one of the most difficult things in life is to find out what does make you happy and what you want to be when you grow up and all that.
Yep.
You
know, that's the courage thing.
Yeah, some people fall right into it, but most of us stumble and learn and a few steps back. And I personally feel like I'm the slowest learner on the planet. It's just almost comical, and it certainly is absurd, some of the choices I've made and career, mess ups or people I've chosen to work with that it didn't quite work out. But I feel very fortunate now to be able to go and play wherever they'll have me. And as it turns out, this year that's Australia, all of the lower 48, up in Alaska, and now I'm going over to the UK and or the not so united United Kingdom, and over to
the soon to be solo.
I'll be in Austria for the election.
Okay,
it's an interesting place. They'll just shrug their shoulders. Whatever happens, like, hey, that's what you get.
Yeah.
Then I'll be in Spain, another place that was kind of ruled with an iron.
Dubious history, let's just say.
It's so beautiful there. It's my favorite. It's just the best. I love going there. I mean, Japan has been a wonderful thing to go there every couple of years as well. And Australia was new to me. So it's like there's been some of the traveling bug that got into me as a child has yielded some of the greatest times that I could ever imagine. So I'm just going to... Every time an experience happens, the first thought is, I want to bring my family here. I want to write a better song so that I can return here and have this particular bowl of soup or whatever it is that's blown my mind.
I think being most of my favorite people are what I call citizens of the world, mm-hmm. right? Citizens of you're members of the human race. You know, it's like, sure, okay, I'm an American. I pay taxes in America. I speak the American version of English. I use American currency, but I don't care what color my money is. I don't care what the color of the people are. I don't care. I mean, I speak English and some very, very poor Spanish. If I'd been a better student, I would have learned my Spanish better, but that's something else I'll set aside. But kudos to you for being a citizen of the world and then doing what artists do best, which is taking that in, refracting it, and then projecting it back to the rest of us.
Right.
Because that's an essential service. And I think it's overlooked overlooked in our country as being an essential service. I think we talk about caring about the arts, but I don't know how much we do. I mean,
it doesn't pay well.
I guess that's what I mean. When I say support, I mean.
I mean, you don't go into poetry for the dough.
Right.
You go in, you're not, you know, art and everything for the day. I mean, yeah, of course you have to make a living, and slowly but surely I have figured that out, and now it's too late to get a job. This is my job. Well, no one's going to give me a job. I'm really surprised that Metro Nashville got me in as a substitute teacher, but somehow I snuck in and got that job. And I do that on occasion. I've done it like four times, but I always want to do it, and I'm teachers. Again, it's like I cannot say enough. Just those few times of subbing, like teachers, my God, they just need so much more. And we have just really reamed that the education system is just, we've just dropped the ball there. And you know, it starts with parenting, obviously, but man, that has just been a really painful thing to observe how difficult the job is and how little they have in certain parts of the of just the city of Nashville,
and how important that job is, because you were, as you were saying exactly. before, I mean, I don't want to get all cliche with the Whitney Houston song or whatever, but they are the future. Like that's, you know, that's those are the people who are going to be managing everything.
Yeah, it's hard.
Those
to,
are the next hard. Americans.
You get stuck in whatever phase of your life you're in, and you're thinking, you know, you get self-centered, you get, you know, narcissism kicks in. And you forget, you know, yeah, it's like you just forget that certain folks that are maybe a little more on the hateful side and not accepting of people that are different from them, they're all going to die off eventually. You know, yeah, I believe personally that racism starts with your parents telling you it.
Yeah.
Now, we all have a little bit of racism in us. I think it's just called feeling comfortable around people that look like you. That's a version of it, right? Like you just feel more comfortable with folks that are, you know, that look like you or something. But then there's like the parents that might hammer it in that actually the people that don't look like you are bad.
Right.
And they are to be treated differently. And that that's hard to escape. You might get lucky and all of a sudden hear a different point of view, or all of a sudden realize, you know, through sports and music, that's what, you know, music is a big part of it. You're like, wait a minute, I don't, you know, that it's like, I think Spike Lee kind of addressed that when with that one character telling the others, like, who's your favorite basketball player? You know, and you love Michael Jackson, don't you? You know, it's like there's, okay, strange example. But anyways, like the thing that's taught from parents is just, that's going to fade. It's bound to. It already, you know, it just seems like for some reason, what's happened, you know, having President Obama be part of the scene now has raised this thing out of, and made it very apparent.
Right.
And very, very present now. But really, still, it's not that big of a majority of people. It's not a majority, actually. It's a minority. They just have a bigger megaphone now.
Right.
To talk about it. And, you know, you don't have to belong to a group. You can just have, the racism is so deep inside that people don't think they're racist anymore.
Right.
They don't think it's racism. It's like, that's not why I don't like these people. And it's fear, like just the fear that people have, you know, and then all of that can be tied on education, if you ask me.
But we're getting deep into it now.
Woo!
It's supposed to be a quick interview, Tim. Come on. No, it's cool, man. I love getting into these topics, and especially it's a very, very important thing. Regardless, like you said before, regardless of what you do, please go out and vote. In just a couple weeks' time, it is your civic duty.
I would say that most of the folks listening, probably fairly participatory folks, you got listening to this. I would say that you should find that one, or we all know somebody that's not gonna.
Yeah,
and that's, I think you should go work on that one person. And it's not about telling them who to vote for. It's about telling them to participate. And I get it. I mean, I just get why some people have thrown up in the towel, and I'm not, you know? And we could discuss this all day, but like we all, you know, find that person that's not participating and convince them to show up. Because I honestly have to say, and this is what worries me about the day after the election, whoever wins has to win, whoever loses has to do it gracefully, or else we're going to have some problems.
Yeah.
Because that's if everybody voted, I mean, I think the Electoral College is reamed. I think that whole system should be replaced. The whole red state, blue state thing, that's ridiculous. All those lines that have been drawn, I think that's ridiculous. If we are the United States, Clearly, we are not. You know, that's the sad truth. But we already had a civil war, okay? We're not going to have another civil war. We're going to have an election. And if the popular vote could decide it, the other side has to say, okay, you got it. This is okay. You got it this time. But that's all gone away, like civility and just being accepting of that and then working to help change it. That's all seems to have gone away now. And it's either like this or that. And, you know, screw you if you're not on my side.
Yeah.
And so the whoever loses the election, I hope that he accepts it gracefully.
Yeah.
And that, because it comes from the top down. And if he doesn't say what he needs to say, then, and if he says that there's been some kind of rigging or some kind of fixed thing and that he doesn't accept it, well, some trouble is going to happen, and the trouble will end up with him in jail,
right,
by the way.
It's going to be a bad place, and yeah, a lot of us are going to be in a bad place, and people are going to be hurt, and that's something to not take lightly.
No.
And I think it's something, it's a dangerous situation. Let's yeah, just say that.
And I get really disturbed with people that want that to happen. That yeah, really upsets me. And people that want the chaos and anarchy, as much as a you know, potential romantic anarchist I can be in my writing, I do not want to see people fighting and dying in the streets. And I want people to use civility and accept victory or defeat and move on to then win the next time or whatever you have to do. So let's get back to some civility.
I agree. And creeping up underneath us, you're hearing Tim Easton's song, is this Killing Time or is it Killing Time?
Killing Time. Well, that's the thing. The two,
okay,
the two meanings,
so yes,
three, is in there.
Okay. And this is on the new record, which is called American Fork. You can pick up at timeaston.com. You're on Amazon, too, and all those other places, correct?
Yes, right?
People can buy that stuff there. Visit timeaston.com. Follow him on Twitter at tim_easton. You've got a lot of tour dates coming up. You're going to be all over the world, pretty much Europe. Pretty much for the end of the year, you're on the road, correct?
Yes.
And then what happens then?
Then I'm going to take some time and relax.
Okay. Do you still get a Christmas card from Beck?
No.
Okay. Tim Easton, thank you so very much for coming and spending time with us, man. I appreciate
thank
it.
You,
please
Joe,
stay in touch. Spin his record, play his record, get out and vote, and be nice to everybody. I say it at the end of every episode, man. And this is, I normally don't say this at the Fast Forward episodes, but if you do anything today, please be good to one another. That's the sign off for me. So, Tim, thank you again.
Word. Thank you, Joe.
Cheers, man.
See ya.
There has to be something more than just killing time. That don't go much for preachy bitches. Act like they ain't going to hell. But it's so true that as you get older, sight rings clear as a bell. I understand how much cooler start burning.